Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome back to The Moments That Made Me with me, your host, Roxy Nafusi. I am so excited to be sitting down today with the incredible Harry Jameson. Harry is a trainer, performance coach, consultant, and founder. As well as being the fitness columnist for The Times, he has co-founded two wellness-focused startups, Rain CBD and Pillar. He continues to train a very small number of high-profile clients, including the Prime Minister. I cannot wait to hear his three defining moments that got him to where he is today. Hi, Harry.
Roxy, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that glowing introduction.
Oh my God, thank you so much for coming on. So I literally can't believe how long I haven't seen you.
I know.
It's been so long, wild.
I know. We've been friends for a long time, and you know, I've been definitely admiring your journey. You know, all the stuff you're doing at the moment, I think, is amazing. So we're all big fan. We're all big Roxy Nafusi fans in our house. That's for sure.
Well, the feeling is mutual. You know, I'm obsessed with you, and you've got two kids now with beautiful Amy. How's being a dad?
You've picked a terrible day to ask me that question, because both my kids were screaming the house down at 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock this morning. So, they've both got little colds, so they were both giving us a bit of grief. But in general, it's amazing. It's the hardest job out there, but it's also the best job out there. You know, you're a mum. I'm preaching to the converted here, but it's it's a pretty special thing.
Oh, it's so sweet. So let's go straight in to your first defining moment.
So my first defining moment was actually a teacher that I had at school, and he was my first. He's like my form tutor, but he was also my PE teacher. And I kind of was always massively into sport, and he was sort of a bit of an icon of mine. You know, he was teaching a sport. I think I kind of wanted to be a PE teacher. Well, first of all, I was a young boy, so I wanted to be a footballer. And when I realised that was probably going to be out of reach, I definitely wanted to be a sort of sports teacher or something within sport. And what he did was he thought differently about things than sort of most teachers in our school. And we would have these sort of form lessons, and he would kind of rip up the form book and he'd say, look, we're not going to do that today. What we're going to do is teach you some skills in life that are going to be much more valuable. And you would have like this half an hour lesson in the morning. And he said, today we're going to teach you the art of debate and of reason and of conflict. I didn't know what he was talking about. I was kind of a sort of cocky 14-year-old. And he asked a question to the group. And he said, okay, who thinks, I can't remember the specific question actually, but I'll just use a topical example. We'll use Brexit as an example, even though it was way after Brexit. Who thinks we should leave Europe? Someone would put their hand up. Who thinks we should remain? Someone would put their hand up. And then he said, right, for the next 10 minutes, you have to argue the opposite person's point. You have to pretend that you think differently about something, and you have to argue that other person's point. And we would do that all the time, and I kind of loved debating. And it was a defining moment for me, because it allowed me to always look and try to understand things from other people's points of view, even if I did not agree with them. And I think that it was an incredibly useful skill in becoming a coach, in becoming a sort of business founder and business owner and consultant, in terms of having the ability to be able to resolve conflict by really trying to understand the other person's point of view. So that was a very defining moment for me.
Oh my God, that is such a sort of like profound and beautiful thing to be taught at such a young age. Especially, I feel like it's, you know, especially when you're 14, 15, 16, it's so easy to become that kind of, like you said, that cocky teenager that really is just, you just think that your way is the highway. It's really easy to become quite narrow-minded at that age if you allow it. So to really be able to understand, it's also empathy and, yeah, you know, and that kind of understanding, that is just, oh my God, I feel like all teachers should be doing that.
They should. It's, you know, at that time, what you're doing when you're 14, 15, you're kind of arguing with your parents and rebelling against authority and trying to find your place in the world by sort of, you know, by hook or by crook, you know, trying to feel out and understand who you are and where your place is. And I think it was, I reference that quite a lot when I talk to people, because, you know, as you become an adult, as you, I'm married, you know, certainly times where I have to sit and understand my wife's point of view. You know, if you pretended that you all thought the same about everything all the time, it wouldn't be true, and actually probably wouldn't be healthy. So I think to have empathy is probably one of the greatest skills in life that you can have. You can still fight your corner and be strong about your position, but when you understand where the other person's coming from, it's a much smoother sort of journey towards resolving any conflict, I think.
Oh, 100%. I think you're so right. It's business, but it's relationships. It's just, I think it's the ability to be humble enough to know that you don't always need to be right, and that everybody is free to have their own perspective and come to their own conclusions, and just letting go of that need for everybody to have the same ideas is life-changing, because that's liberating in itself.
Yeah, definitely. And within the business world, it's essential. I think if everybody in your group or on your board or within your group of founders or even working within your business all thinks exactly the same way, it's very, very difficult to come up with a really great product that appeals to lots of different people. You need people to challenge you. So that's probably one of the biggest things I've learned as I've grown older, is I actually quite like it when I'm not right now. Whereas when I was younger, I hated not being right. I always wanted to be right. And now I want people to prove me wrong. And that's kind of how you learn. So I'm definitely still quite an opinionated guy, and I think I know what I want, but I can always have my mind changed about anything, you know. And I think that's a useful skill to have, is to say, okay, then change my mind, because my opinions are not so steadfast that I can't be swayed by a difference of opinion or somebody more educated in that space or someone with a different experience. So I try. Not that I always am able to, but I try to always, you know, absorb other people's opinions. And I change my mind about stuff all the time. I think there's some sort of certain key values that you carry around with you forever. Mm. But definitely on different subjects, I'm definitely quite fluid in how I think about stuff.
Yeah, I'm so glad you used the word fluid, because it's so much about that, is about just understanding that it's okay to like feel differently than you did yesterday. And I think there's a sense, or I don't know, I get the idea, there's a sense sometimes with ego that we feel like if we've said out loud that we think something, then there's an embarrassment or shame to change your mind, go, actually, you were right, I was wrong, maybe I do think differently. But actually it's a sign of strength and growth to be able to be fluid with, you know, what you believe or what you think.
Definitely. I think it's a good sign, as the sign of a good leader. I think good leaders are like that. And I think we've got it the wrong way around a little bit in this country, where we think that sort of good leadership needs to be this sort of completely immovable, you know, sort of steadfast opinion about various different things, and it's that way or it's wrong. But I think, yeah, good leadership, you know, good parenting, definitely, you know, your kids change your opinions about stuff, and good friendship as well. You think you speak to your friends and you give your opinion, and hopefully your opinion counts for something, but so does theirs. I think it's respecting the other one's opinion. And actually, me and you can disagree about something, and that's completely fine. We don't have to think the same about everything. You know, I've got friends who have, you know, on the more trivial side, we support different football teams and argue about that all the time.
Exactly.
And then on the more serious side, we might have differing political views or differing views on something else. And actually, I've got friends from all kinds of walks of life, from the sort of much more sort of traditional views on things to probably some of the most liberal people you'll ever meet. And I love them all sort of equally. Mm. And I probably sit somewhere fairly in the middle of that. So I think, you can't really just define yourself, hopefully not just define all people by some of their views. There are obviously extremes that would mean that I wouldn't want to particularly be your friend if you had some extreme views. But if you had some that were slightly different to mine, I think we should always be able to find a bit of common ground and try and educate me on the way that you think about stuff. And maybe that might change my mind.
I love that. Well, what a great first moment. Honestly, love, love, loved it. So what was your second defining moment?
My second defining moment really was it's kind of an accumulation of moments, actually. So I went up to Liverpool and went to university as an 18-year-old and met some of the people in my life who are still my best friends today. And it was where I really kind of, I did a sports science and psychology degree, and I then went on to do a personal training diploma that sort of was the start of my career path. And I just think that those probably 4 or 5 years of university, where the first part of them, I did little to no studying. All I did was play sport, drink beer and make new friends and, you know, go out and have fun. But the life experiences that I learned and gained through mixing with people who weren't from where I was from, you know, I was kind of grew up in London in the southeast of England and was surrounded by loads of people who were very, very similar to me. You know, they talked with the same accent as me and thought the same about life, which kind of retrospectively was probably quite isolated, small-minded point of view. I didn't have that life experience to have met loads of people who were my age and grew up in this country, but just grew up in a completely different environment. So I had ended up with friends from Glasgow and Belfast and Manchester and Liverpool and Newcastle, and you know, I got on brilliantly with them and had massive amounts in common with them, although we were from completely different areas. So my second sort of defining moment, I think, with my days at university and the time I spent away from my mum, you know, I'd lived with my mum until that point, and going out to the big wide world and discovering what it was all about. And I say that because I'm sure lots of your listeners and followers actually who are of that age will be maybe eyeing up, shall I go to uni, shouldn't I go to uni, should I go away and travel? And I would say that 100% you should. And because for me, it was a very, very pivotal experience. Yes, I gained some sort of academic qualifications, but I think the academia was very secondary to the life lessons that I learned of being sort of integrated into other people's cultures and ways of thinking. You know, there was a lot of international students. I had a football team where we had this great young Japanese kid called Cha-Cha, who spoke no English, and he was a way better footballer than any of us. So we wanted him in our teams. We weren't playing for the first team. And they didn't want him because he couldn't speak English. So we were like, 100% we're going to have him. And we sort of indoctrinated him into our little sort of lads football culture. And he was just this amazing kid. We had two French guys, a lot of international students who studied with us. And my time playing with that group of lads in that football team, and we had a brilliant unbeaten season. And then what came on from that, you know, the public speaking skills that I learned and having the ability to stand up in front of a decent number of people and give a talk, even though your nerves are shaking everywhere. And I've now gone on to do sort of corporate wellbeing speeches in front of several hundreds of people and working with Twitter over in New York, speaking to their global leadership teams, and actually retrospectively, the skills I learned back then really did set me up for us to be successful as I grew into being an adult. So I would definitely say, and if I look back on what my fondest times were, you know, but didn't really have many cares in the world, didn't have a mortgage and children and businesses to think about, but just thought about trying to get a bit better at what I was doing every day and having fun. And I think that that's a very, very important thing for young adults to get into their heads. You know, it's important to work hard at what you're doing. But my God, it's also important to have fun while you can. And I definitely had a lot.
Amazing. I love that. And I think that's so nice. I think it's so nice also to hear that, yeah, you know, life isn't all, especially if you're, you know, you're someone that is very successful in what you do now. And just even knowing that it's not all work, like you do have to just have fun and meet new people and spend those years, you know, like embracing the no responsibility. And like, you know, exactly that is learning about other cultures and other people. And yeah, it's just this kind of like wild time that it doesn't even feel real. When I look back at university, I'm like, it feels like it's such a lifetime ago. I can't even remember it.
I know. We had this, so I went to uni, I make myself sound very old now, but I went to uni in 2000. And obviously last year, due to COVID and such, the year was a bit of a write-off. But we looked back and went, oh my God, I went to uni 20 years ago. And that's such a sort of scary, because it seems, so much has happened since. And it seems like a lifetime ago, but it also seems like yesterday when you think back on what you were doing and those feelings and emotions and those things that you learn. And I still speak to my best mate, speak to him every day. And we met at uni. We've gone on and had children and like we said before, you know, started our own businesses. In some cases, you know, started one that hasn't gone right and gone back and started another one and supported each other through that. And you kind of, you know, your mates from uni sort of better than you know anybody probably. That time was just a pivotal time in my sort of overall life experience. And I definitely think that those things that I learned then, although I didn't know it at the time, I didn't quite appreciate it at the time, which is similar to lots of things, right? Hindsight gives you a great sense of perspective. But for somebody like you, Roxy, who's now, you know, comfortable standing up and, or maybe not comfortable, but standing up and talking in front of lots of people, that's a really tough thing to do. And the first few times you do it, you're petrified. And you look back, and when you first learned to do that, well, I first learned to do that at university, we would have to present to the group, and that might only be 30 or 40 people. But I remember feeling a bit nervous then. And then, you know, when you give talks in front of much larger audiences or things that are kind of much more important, you know, my business journey, you know, I've had to go out and raise money for stuff, and you're standing in front of some financiers and private equity guys and venture capital guys who are grilling you on questions, and you've got to stand there with confidence and authority and talk about your subject matter. And that's what I learned then. And I didn't know that I was going to use those skills to then go and start different businesses and raise money and do that kind of stuff. But had I not done that then, I don't think I would be as good at it as I am now, or maybe have been able to be successful at it.
I love that.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you like this podcast, then why not check out one of our other amazing Create podcasts? If you just want a good laugh, then check out The Weekly Roast.
Listen, bitch.
Oh,
listen,
make an entrance.
I'm a week off sugar.
Bill is in the house.
I will fly to the UK and I will cut you both.
For the more cultured ones among you, join Laura Wright for Music in My Life.
Yeah, let's go.
I'm so glad no one can see me right now because I was doing some weird dance moves.
Yeah, nothing then, yeah.
Prefer a deep chat? Connie's got you covered on How Are You, the Wellbeing Podcast.
I just became a lot more productive and happier. And for me, like, that's just worth it.
The Weekly Roast, Music in My Life, and How Are You? Just three more podcasts to feast your ears on. Find them wherever you found this podcast.
So what is your third defining moment?
Well, I couldn't be the father of two children and not put the birth of my children in there as my sort of most defining moment. And although, you know, both very, very different, I think, and I love them equally. I think the birth of my son, who is the oldest one, because it was the first time it had happened, was definitely an incredibly defining moment for me. I mean, we were in a room full of my wife gave birth in a birth center. It was a midwife led unit. Everybody in there was a woman who kind of been there and seen there and done it before, and I was the only guy, and everyone was kind of smiling and happy and looking around, and I was just a blubbing mess in the corner, just overcome with emotion, crying my eyes out. All these poor women looking at me thinking, oh my God, what's happened to this guy? And then this baby comes out and they place him on your chest, and your life is never the same ever again. And loads of people that described it to me, this is what it's like. But it is genuinely one of the only experiences in your entire life that you'll never understand what it's like until it happens to you, and then you'll sort of get it. Just the level of sort of love and emotion you feel towards this sort of tiny little baby who's going to need you for everything for a very long time. And then it just really redefined the motivation behind why I do what I do sort of every day. I'm an incredibly hard worker, and my work ethic probably went up tenfold after becoming a dad. And, you know, having a little bit more of a drive and purpose, you know, real purpose behind it, you know, trying to build future for your children and make them proud and do things that will make their lives easier. Not always want them to have an easy life, because I think you need to have challenges in order to build character. So I've now got that tough responsibility of hopefully not giving them too much too soon, but and teaching them the values that I was taught. But the birth of my son was definitely an incredibly defining moment for me.
Oh, of course. It's so beautiful just to hear you speaking about those first moments of holding him and what has been the sort of journey. Because, you know, I feel like the first year is a whole roller coaster in itself. And now Otis is three. Is he almost three?
He's almost, well, he'll be three in September. So he's like, yeah, he's two and a half. And he's a real, real little character, and it's just we're all just sort of making it up as we go along, if we're honest. You know, there's we're all making mistakes as we go, and, you know, feeling guilty that we have or haven't done certain things. And I think you know, part of it all is just kind of accepting that. And you know, we talked about my first life experience about sort of not wanting to be right all the time and kind of being open to admitting when you're not. I think a big thing about being a parent, and in some cases, you know, in your business life, is not trying to be perfect all the time and being not being too hard on yourself when you're not, because you haven't done this before. And it's only by practice over time that you'll get better. And as long as it's all coming from this sort of place of love, which it always does, you know, none of us are doing things that we try not to be a good parent, but or not to be a good founder, or not to be a good husband or partner. But we're all just sort of bumbling our way through it together. And it definitely, although I was obviously loved my wife before, when you see your partner give birth, it's this whole new level of, just sort of admiration and respect, because I just thought, there's lots of things in my life that I think I could probably do just as well as her. And that was one thing where I was like, there's no way I could have ever done that in my life. And I've done some pretty hard physical challenges. And I've run 3 marathons all over the world and had a boxing fight in front of 1,000 people and rode a few thousand kilometres on my bike for charity. If I could never have delivered a child the way she did. So that was probably the most impressive sort of feat of physical endurance that I've ever seen. It was just a very crazy, emotional, sort of pivotal experience for me. And then the second one, equally so, you know, the second one was a girl and completely different births. First one took 17 hours. The second one arrived 26 minutes after we got to the hospital.
No.
So it was very...
Oh, my God.
Nearly came in the taxi. it was, yeah, that was pretty crazy. So Mila, my daughter, came out so quickly. Amy did this amazing hypnobirthing and was very much just sort of in control of things all the way. And Mila came, and because Amy had no drugs, so she had two goes on the gas and air and 2 contractions after we arrived, and that was it. It was like, baby came.
That's incredible.
It was incredible. And no one was really ready. They didn't have enough time to run the birth pool, which I kept calling a hot tub, and everyone kept telling me it's not. I was like, but can we run the hot tub? And they were like, it's not a hot tub, sir, it's a birth pool. And then we were sort of, the taps were on and Amy was turning around and I said, can we get in the water? Well, I think there might have been a couple more swear words there, but I was like, can we get in the water? And the woman looked at me and just sort of, you know, gave this sort of, rubbed her hands under her chin, was like, nope, no time.
And then, boom,
two pushes later, the baby was here. So then they just put Mila on top of me, you know, skin on skin on top of my chest.
Yeah.
And then went back to Amy and got the placenta out and all that stuff. Because there wasn't time for her to get distressed or anything. She didn't cry. So she just came out and just sort of stared at me. And I was the only one crying. Yet again, I was the only one crying. So I was sort of looking at this little baby thinking, wow. And then they went off and were next to us, but did everything else that needed to be done with Amy and then put the baby on the breast. But the first half an hour at least of Mila's life, she was just lying on my chest, just sort of staring at me. And that was a pretty unbelievable moment too.
Oh my God. Honestly, I love birth. I just think it's the most like extraordinary thing in the world. How do you think it feels different being a dad of a son and a daughter?
It does. It does. You know, I just think as the sort of alpha male protector in me just sort of comes flooding out when you have this sort of little daughter who's very beautiful and very angelic, and then the sort of, you know, rough and tumble dad comes out of me when Otis comes running from nursery. You know, he runs out, jumps into your arms, and you know, gives you a big cuddle, and that's up there with the best feelings in the world. And I think you really want to I aspire to treat them both equally. You know, I want them to both do whatever they want and be as happy as they can in their lives. But I think you wouldn't be telling the truth as a father of each if you didn't, you know, slightly look at them in slightly different ways in terms of, you know, how you want them to be protected. Mm. But I do think it's important to, to going back to what I sort of slightly alluded to before, going through the constant struggle now, you know, of being very, very lucky to live in central London and to have sort of opportunity to strike that balance between giving them every opportunity you possibly can versus, you know, teach them that life can be a struggle sometimes. And actually, when you struggle through challenges, that's how you sort of build resilience and character. So without, you don't want to give them too much too soon. And I had jobs washing dishes in the local pub when I was sort of a teenager, and I hated it at the time, but afterwards, you know, it taught me work ethic and the value of money. And my mum would sort of drop me off and pick me up at the end of the night, which I'm sure she hated at 11:30 on a Friday night. But it was definitely, you know, something that was very character building. So that's probably what I aspire to do to my children, is to really instill, you know, values and character in them. And my wife, Amy, when my son was born, she put it better than I could have. She said, "Our only job now is to make him smart and to make him kind." And I thought, if we can do those two things, then he'll do well in life.
Oh my God, that is just so beautiful. That is just, that really is exactly what you want to do. That is so, Amy, a poet. Yeah.
She is a poet. She is.
So, Harry, I want to ask you a little bit, because you obviously are incredibly successful in what you do. You're a founder, you're, you know, kind of top of your game, really. And for someone listening that is starting out in their career, no matter what it is, what do you think are some of the little secrets to just being the best that you can in whatever area you work in?
I mean, that's a great question. And I think it all starts with a passion. And for me, it did anyway. You know, I was one of those really, really lucky people. I mean, as you have become, you know, over the years, that I managed to turn something I was very passionate about into a job. So I kind of, although by default being a PT, you know, I was getting up very, very early, very antisocial hours. I worked every Saturday for at least 10 years. I would work evenings and early mornings, although it never really felt like a work, because I loved it. You know, I loved exercising. I loved having conversations. When I've been able to train some of the most successful people in the country, and in some cases globally, and I've learned an enormous amount off them. But it all came from the fact that I was really, really passionate about what I did, and I never genuinely put a hand on my heart, never set out to be in my first job. I never set out in the initial stages to become wealthy and successful. Those weren't the drivers behind what I was doing. Being really good, and in my case, I wanted to be the best trainer I could be and have the biggest impact on some really big names and work with big brands. I wanted to do that. But it wasn't driven from a monetary perspective. It was really just driven from a sort of personal passion perspective. And the success came as a result of that, I think. I was quite uncompromising in my sort of values of what I wanted to do. And that was really important. So if you can be sort of very proud, I always wanted to be proud of everything that I put out there and that I did. And if that's a sort of starting block, it stands you in good stead to do really good work. The world is different now. And I started my career when Facebook wasn't even invented. And now, you know, lots of trainers in our space make 90% of their money from Instagram without ever having to actually sort of train people. And I would sort of push back against that slightly. And whilst I have some ambassador deals, you know, brilliant brands, Lululemon, Techno Gym, you know, some of the biggest brands in the world, I they want to work with me because I built the foundation of I hope, being a really good coach rather than the other way around. And I think you need to build a really strong foundation of experience in your chosen field, and the success will follow on after that. That would be my first piece of advice. And my second piece of advice would be to sort of knock down some doors. I went and did a young sort of strength and conditioning. I was a young coach and I wanted to see what it was like in elite level sport. And my cousin was a physio at the time, and he introduced me to a guy that I won't forget. His name was Dan Clether, and he was a strength and conditioning coach for the English Institute of Sport. And I asked him if I could come and just shadow him for 1 or 2 days and watch what he was doing. So I went down to Twickenham in St Mary's, where they had UK Athletics for training, and watched him put in all these sort of young athletes through their sessions. And now, retrospectively, looking back, he was training this young sort of skinny kid, and he said that this guy is going to be a future star. And it turned out that that guy was Mo Farah, who went on to be Sir Mo Farah and to win double gold in the Olympics for Great Britain and get his knighthood or MBE or knighthood. I think he got a knighthood. And I really soaked up that environment, and I wouldn't have got there if I didn't, you know, send emails around and knock down people's doors and ask people for an opportunity to come and to learn and be willing to do stuff for free just to build experience. And that was really important for me, is to be around. Kind of goes back to, again, what we were saying before about not wanting your ego to get in the way. I wanted to be the least intelligent person in the room so that I could sit there and learn off the more experienced and talented and smart people and be a bit of a sponge. So I was really lucky that I surrounded myself with very, very talented people who were very generous with their time and allowed me to learn from them. So it was a bit of a ramble, but I hope that makes sense in terms of being able to sort of position yourself right and do things because you're passionate about them and just, you know, listen and learn as much as you can.
I love that. I think it's honestly so inspiring. And I think especially just knowing that in the beginning, you do just have to put yourself out there, ask people for help, you know, even like you said, like shadowing people, working for free, like, you know, it really is all about that. It's not just something that happens overnight. You've also got to work hard and, you know, listen and learn and keep going and be persistent. So yeah, I just want to say thank you so, so much for sharing your defining moments with us. I honestly just, I think you are such a great example of someone who, you're just very humble and you have such a great ethic, you know, and value system, and it really like resonates out from you. And I think you will be inspiring so many young people. And especially I think to have a male role model like you is so important. So I'm so excited for people to hear this.
That's very, very kind. And I think, I'm honored to come on and help and watch your journey. And I think that the other thing and the last thing I would say, because I know that this is a very sort of powerful message that you get out, that you put out there. And that's one of sort of something that I learned much later than I would have liked, was the sort of the power of mindfulness and using meditation, but also the power of manifesting things, the power of like almost talking things into existence and willing them into existence. So anything I've got now, whether it's life or career or any, you know, a car or a house or whatever it is, you know, I talked and I thought those things into existence, and then I worked bloody hard to make them happen. But there was definitely, I tried not to sort of stumble across stuff. I wanted to have sort of quite a clear vision about what I wanted to achieve, and then I sort of set about doing it. And whilst you can be reactive, you know, opportunities will come your way, and don't be scared to take them. You know, take them, and if they don't work out, that's fine. You don't want to look back and regret the things that you didn't do. But I definitely, you know, had a path and a bit of an action plan in place as to how I was going to achieve those things. And, you know, there's a bit of a running joke in my house because my wife is huge on manifestation. She's like, well, I manifest the things and then you go and make them happen. And that's kind of what we have, a bit of teamwork in our house. But I do think that there's definitely sort of equal gravity with both of those approaches.
Oh, I love that. I mean, you know, I am the biggest manifesting advocate. I live and breathe it. And it's always so... it's just so reassuring and lovely to hear when other people are, you know, explaining that, yeah, they didn't just visualize it. They visualized it and then worked really hard to make it happen. And that really is the essence of manifesting, is knowing what you want, but then being proactive in manifesting it into your existence. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing that.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Harry, and I can't wait to see you all soon.
Likewise. Love to you and the family, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you, love.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.